What is up, everybody? Welcome to Street Level Floppies Episode 9, a rare Wednesday night recording, new comic book day recording. So instead of reading comics, we are here with you talking about comics. My name is Andrew. I go by Real Comics, and I am here with my co-host, Fred.
Hey, what's going on?
And we're here to talk about some indie books, some creator-owned books, things off the beaten path, things that are not the big two, things we think you should take a look at. As always, I like to remind everyone that we are part of the Nation of Nerds family. We enjoy spreading knowledge, educating, entertaining, and introducing you to a lot of new comic books. So without further ado, let's get into the comic books. All right. Our first comic book review today is going to be Bully Wars number 2. The Bully Wars are invitation only, but with Spencer's help, Rufus may have a real bully's way in. The pieces are coming together, but getting invited is just the first step. Training Day Has Arrived, written by Scotty Young. Art and cover by Aaron Connolly. Colorist Jean-Francois Beaulieu. Letters by Nate Pecos. Variant cover by Scotty Young. A second variant cover by Matthew Allison. Editor Kent Wagenschultz. Published by Image. Bully Wars, Fred. What'd you think of Bully War?
Well, this book kind of reminds me of something you would find at the Cartoon Network, kind of like Ed, Edd n Eddy or Cow and Chicken. And because of that, I find this book pretty enjoyable. The beginning of this book, we find Rufus, the middle school bully. He's at Spencer's house. Spencer is a former target of Rufus's. And Rufus begins to realize, you know, when he's at his house, that Spencer isn't much different than him. They have a lot of similar likes, and you'll see that throughout the book with the artwork, if you pay attention to Spencer's room. And then at the end, you'll notice similar things in Rufus's room. Now, after that, you know, Spencer and Rufus are working on a target or to meet up with, say, who was it, Coach Hurt? And they try to figure out a way to get Rufus into the Bully Wars. And his way is they blackmail him. And so they go into Coach Hurt's office, which you find out when you look at him, he kind of resembles Coach Bobby Bowden. Did you get that feel, Andrew?
Yeah, I totally did. It looks like Bobby all the way.
Yeah, especially like his mannerisms and the way he acts. So they're, you know, speaking. So Rufus is speaking with, I almost said Coach Bowden, Coach Hurt. And he trying to get into Bully Wars. And there's a little back and forth, you know, going there. And finally, he goes, you know, he busts out this thing, which he reveals that they have something on Coach Hurt. I'm not going to reveal what it is, but let's just say Coach Hurt gives him the invitation. They get back to Spencer's home. Spencer kind of has like this board mapped out with all these different bullies, their weakness, their strengths. They train Rufus. Rufus is trains really hard. And I just really like this book. It's hard for me to believe that Scotty Young is not doing the art. I find the art fun. The colors are extremely vibrant, especially with the purples that they use. It's really done well. What did you think, Andrew?
This book was a lot of fun. You're correct on the colors. I mean, nice and bright, like something you see on Cartoon Network. Definitely geared for kids. Teen Titans bright. Ed, Edd n Eddy bright. You know what I mean? And the caricatures, the facial features that they make, the expressions that they make. Very cartoonish. I could totally watch this cartoon. There's no doubt about it. I can imagine the voices of all the kids. I like that this movie book also has a lot of heart. You're starting to see Rufus and his nerd that he bullies becoming friends.
Yeah.
They have more in common than you would think. Well, maybe not friends yet, but definitely at least allies. It's kind of neat to see where it's going, and we're going to have this twist. So I'm excited. I'm really excited to see what they have to do with it.
Yeah, I get that feel because, you know, from him, you know, with the meeting and stuff, and he actually was pretty nice to them when he had left. And I think this book's going to have some meaning behind it. I really feel like it's going to teach you something. I think it's about friendships. Like, you know, just because somebody's different than you doesn't mean you can't have something in common. And I think there's, you know, there's something much deeper, or I hope there is. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there is. I think where he's going with this is that this is an all ages book. Maybe not for everybody, but It's a nice change of pace from what we normally read, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I totally would say that because we read a lot of horror or some deep books, especially like Frendo when we read that. You know, this is definitely a palate cleanser and something that you can, you know, just have fun with. Even though you might not take much away from it, it's still fun. And for me, I think this is something that I could share with my kids because this is, you know, for all ages, maybe not so much targeted for my age, but I'm a little immature for my age. So,
yeah, I mean, heck, kid at heart, right. There's nothing wrong with watching some cartoons. So let's think of some scores. What would you score Bully Wars?
I would definitely give this a 3.5. I had fun with it. It's a good book. It's definitely, you know, it's definitely not right in my wheelhouse, but it's a good book. If you like to have fun, you like art or Scotty Young style art, this is definitely a book to pick up.
Definitely. Look at this book. I mean, the art is amazing. The caricatures are amazing. All the detail in the background. The colors just pop off the page. It's a very well done book and it's written very well. It paces very easy. You understand what's going on. So yeah, 3.5. That's where I am too. All right. Our next book is Murder Falcon #1 from Daniel Warren Johnson, the creator of the Eisner nominated series Extremity. Comes Murder Falcon. The world is under attack by monsters and Jake's life is falling apart. No band, no girl, no future until he meets Murder Falcon. He was sent from the heavy to destroy all evil, but he can't do it without Jake shredding up a storm. Now, with every chord Jake plays on his guitar, the power of metal fuels Murder Falcon into an all-out kung fu fury on those that seek to conquer the earth. It's time to shred.
Yeah, rock on.
Writer, art, cover, letters, Daniel Warren Johnson. Colorist, Mike Spicer. Letters by Russ Wooten. Associate editor, Ariel Besh. Editor, Sean Mekowitz. Published by Image. This is Murder Falcon. This one is for you, Gian. We know you're the metalhead. So we wanted to dedicate this metal-opolix type crazy ode to metal to you.
That's right.
This book was pretty wild. It doesn't pull any punches. It doesn't pretend to be something it's not. I mean, this is immediately I thought of Jack Black and I thought of School of Rock and, you know, just the love that's kind of corny. It embraces it, but at the same time, like, yeah, metal, right. Metal will save the day. Rock will save the day, you know, and the fact that his powers gives power to the Murder Falcon is by him shredding on his guitar.
Yeah.
you couldn't ask for more. I just really had a good time. you couldn't help but chuckle at many of the things. But there's a nice story in here as well. And if you look deep, you're going to see a book that's definitely has some heart hidden in this metal rock saga. What do you think, Fred?
Well, I mean, right at the beginning of this book, when the dude steps out of his band and he looks all like Clint Eastwood-y and he's like walking up, like he's got this intense look in his eye, like he's straight out of like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Don't get me wrong, like the van, it has like that 18 feel, like it's that cargo van. He just gets out of it. Man, he looks at that monster and he's like, I'm Jake. Like he says, like I picture him like with that Clint Eastwood voice just going, I'm Jake. And then there's like the baby with the mom crying. And then he throws the guitar, like the strap over his shoulder, kind of like talks smack to the monster. And the cop's like, dude, you're going to get killed. And Jake's like, I don't need weapons. I brought metal. Man, when he said that, I was like, this is so badass. I was like, I'm going to have so much fun with this book. Seriously, right there, I thought this book was awesome. And not only like when you described like the Murder Falcon, now the Falcon kind of looks like a cross between Rambo and Cable. Yep. Like it looks totally like that. And I was like, oh, this is so much fun. And then like they tell you like metal destroys evil. And I'm like, oh, there's meaning behind that. Metal. And then you know, the bad guy, I think he's like King something. I can't remember his name, but he said it like he feeds off like the anxiety and cruelty and it feeds him. I was like, man, for a book that's kind of like Bill and Ted's, you know, Excellent Adventure with like the Wild Stallions, this is pretty deep. Like, so, yeah. You know, and you kind of root for the character Jake because you find out like he has like no self-esteem. He's kind of down in the dumps, you know, he's trying, you know, he's defeated, but this happens to him and he gets the power to shred. Man, this is, it's a fun book. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I enjoyed it. I mean,
yeah, he's lost something. We know that something caused him to lose his love to play.
Right.
And throughout the whole book, you know, people are coming up to him. Are you okay? Have you been playing? And he's all, no. And everyone's encouraging him. Even the older waitress at the diner, you know, shows that she's listening to his music on her iPod and like, yeah, this brightens the day. Wish you could get me some new material, you know?
Right. Yep.
So it's a lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah, the kaijus. And then the Murder Falcons from the Heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
He's like, just play it. Should I play another E note? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, this is so rad, man. This is awesome.
It's crazy. And he broke his guitar earlier in it. So then his guitar is reformed in this magical guitar.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a fun book. Now, some people might not like enjoy the art so much, but the story and, you know, like if you just like put yourself in the character and read it like a, like you're just like a total, like you're Brendan Fraser Airheads voice. Like if you do that, you're going to have a good time. I think you will. I mean, that's kind of like what I did and I enjoyed it. Like, especially when I saw him get out of the van, he was like kind of short and he's like, you know, he said like, I brought metal. And I was like, oh wow, this is where we're going with this book. Okay. So then I was like, just put myself like I was warned, like I knew what to expect. So I just had fun with it. I thought it was, you know, for a first issue and for the Murder Falcon to come out of the guitar and stuff. Like I thought that was interesting. It was pretty sweet.
I wish Chris was here for this part because I would be curious. Because is it because we're old dogs and we kind of come from an era where some of this stuff was more popular? Like, I wonder how a kid from today it's more hip hop, it's more and even the metal, the rock that is right now is more like emo, dreary, screamo stuff, and it's not that old school, like, the power of metal kind of thing.
Yeah, because when I grew up, you know, Generation X, and we were, like, huge into, like, alternative music, like, any band that came from Seattle, like, that was my whole high school, you know. That was good times, and I enjoy that stuff. So maybe that's why I liked it so much, because I found, like, I brought my inner high school student into me.
Yeah, so that's I'm just curious. I'd like to hear that interpretation. If they got the same enjoyment out of it, or are we just very nostalgic for an era that we missed, like you said, our youth, you know, long hair and guitars. But yeah, what a cool book. I'm with you. The art wasn't necessarily my favorite. It was, but you pointed out to me, it's really cool when you have somebody who's creating this whole book. He's creating, you know, he's wrote it, he's drawing it, these are his characters, this is his vision. So when you think about it from that standpoint, it elevates everything and realize this is somebody's complete vision, their book that they want to do. So,
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, like, that's huge. And we have a couple of books like that, like our next book, it's another person that does that. You got to respect that. That's a lot put on you. And especially like in the last episode when Chris tells us like, you know, what happens at certain, like at Marvel when he's there and like how it takes a team. This guy's taking on two jobs and doing the book. And that's huge.
Cool. So scores for, for metal. What do you give metal?
Well, no, I'm going to do this and this is for Gian. Let's rock on, brother. I'm going to give this a 4.5 Falcon style.
Nice. Falcon style. Crank it to 10 almost. Yeah, I'll give it a 4. That's where I'll go with Murder Falcon. The art was not really my favorite, so that's probably what brings it down a little for me. But we have a great story. There's a lot of heart that's yet to be revealed. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a fun book. I'm interested to see what happens next issue. That's for sure.
Okay, the next book we have is Farmhands number 4. As the effects of the Jedediah seed ripple through Freetown, Andrea Jenkins is about to have the worst day ever. She'll be chastised and berated, and she'll punch at least 3 people by the end. Also, Zeke vs. Coyotes. Seriously? Written by Rob Gulleroy. Art and cover by Rob Gulleroy. Colorist Taylor Wells. Letters by Cody Chamberlain. Published by Image. Farmhand, Fred. What did you think of Farmhand?
Just like the previous issues of Farmhand, this issue centers around one of its characters. This issue is the daughter of Farmer Jenkins, Andrea. We learn a bit about her past in the military. We also learn of her current job / mission she's working on. That is a game changer. No spoilers. I'm not giving any spoilers on this. What I did like is while we're getting a little closer, look at Andrea's life. We have multiple political ads for the town's mayoral race paced throughout this issue. I feel like when these ads were put in this issue, it kind of helps with the pacing. It kind of breaks up, you know, so we don't just get bored with Andrea's life. I thought that was done well. We get a lot of reveals in this book that are both, two of them, that are both very intriguing, especially the one about her leg.
Yeah, that was big.
Yes. The art is as fantastic as always. Shout out to Rob Gilroy. Bright colors in this book as well. And in this book, I feel like the art pops even more than the past books that we spoke about today. Yeah, man, I really enjoyed this book. What did you think about it?
I love this book. This book has been growing on me from issue to issue. When someone first told me about it before the first one came out, I was sold by someone at the comic shop, and I've enjoyed every issue, and it took a while, I think, for some other people to jump completely on, because it did start a little slow, but the art is fantastic. I just love the style that he's drawing. I love his color palette. It's very earthy tones, which makes a lot of sense if you're drawing something that has to do with a farmhand. I feel the world is just getting bigger with each issue. We keep getting a new character introduced, and you're like, wow, this character has so much. I can't wait to hear their story. And then you remember, wow, in last issue, that character had so much, and I was excited for their story, and again and again. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome. One of my favorite books for sure.
Yeah, and the thing that I enjoy about this book is, like, Andrea goes from a backup kind of supporting character, and that she becomes, like, a top 3 character in this book.
This book just hits all the marks for me. It's funny. It has a mystery. It has a little tinge of horror. And maybe even has zombies for all we know. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you were going to score Farmhand, what would you give it?
I give this book definitely a 4. It's a solid 4 almost every week. Now, the next issue, like if it plays off of this and builds on to the things that were revealed, it has a chance to be a 5. Definitely. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I tweeted earlier, this is one of those books that I feel that is now a must-read book. It has truly moved on to where it was just a comic book, to where it's a series that you want to read. It has a lot going on, and probably should just add it to your pull and expect it to be quality every week. I think we'll be more surprised the weeks that it's not quality.
Yeah, what I'm going to say is, if it's not on your pull, why isn't it?
I bet you it's the concept. I bet you people are like, what? Why do I want to know about a person who's growing body parts? You know what I mean? But
right.
Check it out. There's a lot more going on.
Yeah, it's definitely cartoonish and things. So it's not like, you know, it's not literal. it's a good time. It's kind of like, if I was to compare it to Bully Wars, it's got that kind of art style and stuff, which makes it fun too. Except it deals with heavier topics.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot more going on about, you know, I think it's going to hit some green issues. It's going to definitely get a little more involved about the whole process of prosthetics and what's it called? Reattaching limbs and things like that.
So yep.
There's going to be a lot going on. I'd give it a 4 as well. I think that's what you said,
yes,
right? A 4?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going 4-2. I got off on my tangent and I didn't give a score. I really like this book. Every month that it's out, I look forward to it. The covers are awesome. Everything about it.
Right.
Definitely a great
book. And like the last issue with Murder Falcon, Gilroy does both like the art and the story, which is huge, because this like we actually seeing how he's building the world in this book. And this is, man, this could go on for many issues if it continues that way.
Oh yeah. He's dropping those little nuggets mm-hmm. that are there, you know, they're going to be built on.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're not just random little things. He's, I'm going off on tangent, but like last how we, there's the, something that happened on the internet
mm-hmm.
for the son, the dad, and then the young boy, what's happened to him at school, and the wife, some of the things she's doing, and then we kind of see a little bit of the dad's past,
right.
the grandpa.
And then, I mean, and then there's like the Pete preacher, and then there's the kid that's kind of scary.
All right. We'll move on to our next book. Weatherman number 5. Nathan Bright is in the clutches of the Pearl, and the clock is ticking. Agent Cross must choose between her own desire of vengeance and protecting a man who, though drenched in blood of billions, might still be innocent. Written by Jody LaHoop. Art and cover Nathan Fox. Colorist Dave Stewart. Letters by Steve Wands. Variant covers Marcos Martin, and a second one by Ryan Sook. Editor Sebastian Gerner. Published by Image. All right. Weatherman has been a little up and down for me. It's a book that I came out of the gates loving. The first two issues, I was ready to proclaim this the best comic book of 2018. The art, the frenetic pace, the story. The last two, including this one, seem to be jumping around in a way that make it a little more difficult to read. There's a lot going on. It takes multiple reads sometimes for me to fully appreciate this book. The art is kind of frenetic to show a lot of motion because there's a lot happening. There's a lot of action in this book. There's a great car chase scene again, or spaceship chase, or whatever you want to call these vehicles. There's a good fight scene. It's kind of graphic, showing like some torture that goes on. And I like, kind of similar to some other books that we've been reading a lot of, the use of social media in a way to interact with the world. And that's kind of cool and interesting. And I guess that's going to be the theme of a lot of books we get this year because we keep getting it. It seems like a new book comes out and we get it again. What'd you think of Weatherman?
I'm with you. It took me two reads to get it. Like, you know, because we read so many books when we go to make our list of which books we're going to do. And I didn't, like, the first time I read it, I was like, oh, what's happening here? But the second time I read it, I was like, oh man, I'm glad that I kind of, you know, put this to the side and read it only by itself. I enjoyed it a lot. Like, there's so many characters and so many things happening. Like, I feel like they're trying to tie up a lot of things because I think next issue is the last issue of the arc. But the way that this ended, I'm interested to see, like, the outcome. Like the game show host or the guy that's the millionaire seeking uh-huh. revenge and stuff. I think there's something else, like, deeper there. And, like, he's crowdfunding to, you know, get his jollies off on, did you say Nathan? Is that his name, Nathan?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but what I really have noticed is, like, each issue, you kind of see, like, how Nathan's affected each person's life, and you kind of dig into that. Like, that's been kind of huge. But, man, the character that I really don't like is the game show guy. He's sadistic, man. There's something about him. Even, like, the way that he talked to, like, the lady that came on there and she kissed him and stuff. And he was like, don't let that happen again. I'm like, oh, this guy's a jerk off, man. I do enjoy the dialogue and how it's written. There's some comedy points and it's kind of a little dark humor. I like it. It's still good. It just, this issue took me two reads to, you know, catch everything.
You know, I thought of something we were talking about. They're unlikable. There's a lot of unlikable characters in this comic. They're meant to be that way. And the likable character is the Weatherman. And maybe that's it. Maybe because the Weatherman is currently gagged and tied down because they're torturing him, that we're not getting some of the fun Weatherman. You know, like the personality we got in the first two. So that could be pulling a little way. And we're just getting some of, like, everybody's angry in this one. Everyone's angry at everybody in this whole book, and no one seems to be having any fun whatsoever. So maybe that's what it is. But yeah, the art's beautiful. The ending just blew this book up for me. Now I don't know where they're going.
Right, because
so that was kind of cool.
Because did you see like the host? Did it look like he was bleeding?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that was him.
Yeah.
Okay.
It did.
Because it looked like he was split in half. Or, like, he might be.
Yeah, that just, It just blew me away. I was like, okay, right. So now where are they going? I really like, so that's kind of fun, you know? Now I have to come back for one more. You know, it's a good book if you're patient. So I guess it's not doing what Farmhand is doing, and it's not doing what later we're going to talk about, Crowded. It seemed to have their story tighter. You know, you don't get lost, and you get it in one read. Like, wow, that was good. If you can read it twice or three times to get more from it, but you get what's going on really well in the first read. And I think that's where Weatherman suffers a little. And I don't see people talking about it as much as they did the first 2 weeks. So I think it's dropped off in general.
Well, I think it's kind of, you know, with the art, like seeing what's happening in the panels, like there's so much action going on that you have to take the time to look at it. Otherwise, you miss things. Like there was a panel at the beginning where there was a guy that was taken, and I didn't notice the first time through the PDF what had happened to this character that we were introduced to in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought it happened, but I didn't see it clearly. But then when I actually had the floppy in my hand and looked at it, I was like, oh, okay, now that makes sense. It made it much smoother. And, you know, it's definitely a good book. I enjoy it. It's just a little deep right now.
Yeah, folks, I always try to get the floppy. You can get so much more out of the floppy than you can a digital copy of these books. I mean, I know that for lots of reasons people go digital, but if you can get a floppy, I mean, the experience is much more enjoyable, without a doubt. Scores for Weatherman number 5.
I would give this book a 4. It's a solid book, especially after the second read. I appreciated it more. It's definitely a 4.
I'm going to go a 3.5. It's just a little too all over the place for me. I'm still going to read it. I'm still pulling it. I need to know how this thing ends. I hope our Weatherman gets out of this mix, because I think the story would suffers without him having more involvement.
Yeah, definitely. Like the next issue, you know, it's going to be good because it's going to tie up everything. It's the end of the story arc, so it's about to be good. That's the book to jump on, so you need to get this one to know what's happening next.
All right, the next book, Crowded number 3. Two of the newest heavy hitters in the private murder industry have just landed in Los Angeles looking for Charlie and eager to collect the almost $2 million Reaper campaign on her life. Charlie, oblivious to the growing danger, tries to carry on her freewheeling lifestyle while under Vita's lock and key. But even their safest safe house can't keep the fame and fortune-driven killers off their trail for too long. Written by Christopher Sabella, pencils Rose Stein, inks Ted Brandt, colorist Triona Farrell, letters by Cardinal Ray, cover by Rose Stein, Ted Brandt, and Triona Farrell. Variant cover, Rose Campe, published by Image. This is Crowded.
If you haven't jumped onto Crowded, you need to. Here's a little backstory. There's this app called Reaper that has crowdfunded a hit on Charlie. We have yet to find out why there's a hit on Charlie, but because of it, Charlie has sought out a bodyguard to protect her named Vita. On this issue, the issue focused on assassins. They're everywhere in this book. The worst of it is there are two really big assassins that are right on her trail. These two assassins are so careful and calculating when to attack and how. Not to mention, the crowdfunding has now reached 1.5 million. What I enjoy is how Sabella uses our, you know, cyber lives to kind of scare us. For instance, one of the assassins basically has a YouTube highlight reel of his killings. That's kind of sick. Now, they also think that their dog has a microchip in it that's, you know, people are able to track them now, which is interesting. I love the plot development. This book is like a total adrenaline rush. I really enjoy it. The art's great. The colors are great. You know, like this book, not necessarily focus on Charlie and Vita so much. It's more so like the assassins, and you get to like learn them, which is huge because, you know, it's more of that world building that we talked about in other books. I just really like this book. What do you think about it, Andrew?
Man, this book is outstanding. This is the third time we've reviewed Crowded, and it's the third issue. So I'm going to try to hit some other areas. We know Sabella's killing it, but the coloring in this book, it's just so well done. I mean, each character is distinct. It's interesting. It creates a, it's alive. It pops off the page. There's a lot of panels in this book, and whoever's setting them up and directing the action combined with the lettering, they do a good job. We just talked about another book where you kind of get a little lost and you're not sure how it jumped here, jumped there, and you have to go back. I don't feel that way with Crowded. When I read Crowded, it just flows. It just keeps flowing. And the action is moving just as much as it is in Weatherman. It is constant. They are on the run. They can't find a safe place to stay. So they're constantly being hunted down. So they're constantly, there's a crazy chase scene where a tour bus is chasing them. They're trying to get this chip out of the dog. And then you have this other side story that's introducing the two new assassins. I'm very fond of the Cirque character. She's much more interesting than the obnoxious Trotter, though he looks like he's going to be highlighted in the next issue. So we'll find out how good he really is. But yeah, I really like the book. And I like the use of technology, kind of explain where we're going with it. I don't think there was as much development on Vita and Charlie this time. Like you said, it's a little
bit on the other characters. Like this book, the whole team, like this book and the next book, I feel like the teams work so well with each other. You can see it, like you can see like the script complementing the art and things like that. It works so well with each other. And you can even like not even pay attention to the words. Like, okay, for instance, the second time through when I look at books, I'm mainly like the first time I read it. Second time, I kind of like just look panel to panel and look at the art and see if I remember what was said so I can truly enjoy it. Like this book, I can almost remember word for word what happens. It's so good. Like, you know, man, I can't get enough of this.
How about that cover? I mean, the regular cover, not the variant, the regular cover of her shades, the sunglasses, and you see the reflection of our two main characters in it. I always love when the artists do reflections. Yeah. I'm just a big sucker for that. And the greens and everything. Yeah, this book is really cool. The characters, everything about this book, and just the craziness that, imagine everybody who has this app trying to cash in and get this $1 million, you know.
Right.
To kill this poor woman, you know. And we still don't even know what the hell she did. She's not willing to tell Vita what she did. Vita's still trying to get it out
of her. It's kind of crazy, but like just to see like the world turn upside down just to chase one person like that, it's kind of sick. But nowadays, you can kind of see it. You can see it.
Yeah, and then, like you said, and then that one character, Trotter, the one assassin, he's building a YouTube career. I mean, he's like some of those sleazy YouTube guys that are out there that just do really awful, obnoxious things to monetize their YouTube. And that's what this guy is.
And with him, his demeanor and stuff, he kind of looked like a cocky NASCAR driver to me. I don't know. That's the look he had to me. And the female assassin, she looks familiar. Like there's a movie I've seen that a character looks like that.
Know who I thought of when I saw her? Have you ever seen, what's the name of the movie? The singer Alicia Keys plays a female assassin. It has Common and it has a whole bunch of people. It's an ensemble piece. Jeremy Piven's. They're all trying to kill Jeremy Piven's. He's like some drug guy in Vegas and everybody's trying to, but it reminded me of her.
Okay.
And then the other guy, the asshole, reminded me of Logan Powell. Paul, is that it?
It kind of does, except one thing though, he's kind of like financially strict because he has like his assistant with him and she's like trying to keep costs down and stuff. So there's a method behind his madness. Like that was kind of interesting to me too. Like she was calculating how much things would cost and things like that. But he tried to be like rock star lifestyle, like he's portraying himself to be. It's definitely, you know, it's a good book, man. I really enjoy it. Sabella is on a roll. You named that right, because then was it last week we did House of Muck?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, seems like
we did Shanghai Red the week before that, I believe.
Yeah, he just needs to make another book so we can fill 4 weeks.
Yeah, because you know, if his things are going to end, what are we going to do for a show? He's like usually tends to be our top book. I hope Crowd is not going anywhere for a while. I really like this book and I like this series. And yeah, like I said, it's a perfect team. This is like that come together of everything and you get that magical book. If you are not on this book, at least get the trade when it comes out. I mean, you will be very happy with it.
Well, you know that they click and they enjoy like working together, because each one of these creators on this book has the same avatar on their Twitter handle. Like they have it. So they take pride in it, and they, you know, you can tell, like, even when we post like our picks for the week, this was a pick, your top three on our Twitter page, Street Level Floppies. Each one of them like either liked it or commented or retweeted it. And I seen like Ted Brandt was one, Rose Stein, Christopher Savella, each one of them. And they all have like the same Reaper app. It's a, man, what a team and what a book.
So score for Crowded, number three.
I would definitely give this one, I was going to go with a 4, but now that we talked about it and stuff, I'm going to give it a 4.5. I really enjoyed this book. It was, you know, talking about it kind of brought out some more love for it. So,
yeah, I'm a 4.5. I mean, I flirted with the 5 and I said, maybe not quite the 5 because we didn't get a lot of Vita and Charlie development.
Right.
And with folks are, but man, I've going to read this one again probably when we get done with this show, because I hyped myself up about it again.
Yeah,
that one or the next one, I'm not quite sure, because the next one is pretty damn
good. I'm definitely reading the next one again, and probably one more time.
All right, well, let's go into that next one then. Hot Lunch Special number 3, a Midwestern noir series set in the harsh landscape of northern Minnesota Iron Range. Hot Lunch Special is about family, food, and the fight for survival. Only one question is worth asking. Is blood thicker than sandwiches? There are no secrets now, only bodies. It's dinner time, and Dorothy and Jordan are competing to sit at the head of the table, both forcing their family members to make a hard decision. Do the Corroys, I think it's Corroys, go to the cops, or do they go to war? The Corroy criminal legacy is fully revealed. Some choices have already been made. The Irish crime lord Big Jim Moran is getting anxious. He's left too many loose ends, and he's forced to cut the strings. The order has been given. It's time for everybody to die. Written by Elliot Rowell. Art and cover by George Fornes. Letters by Taylor Esposito. Published by Aftershock. Hot Lunch Special. Wow, this is another amazing book. Maybe it doesn't have the vibrant colors and the technology and the things that you get with Crowded. This is a good old school mafia story, you know, set in the most unlikely place, in a little town in Minnesota, and they're fighting over sandwiches. not really. I mean, they're fighting over legitimately a beef of family. You know, the Irish family, which has been the mob that, handled their transport with their trucks, killed Dorothy's son and the family head's grandson. And now it's time for payback. And it gets botched. It's a mess. There's all kinds of things. And there's just so much emotion. We find out a little backstory on this family. There's a lot going on in this book. And I loved every second of it. Fred?
Yeah, I mean, this book continues to deliver. It's seriously in my top 5 of books that are out currently. I totally look forward to it each time it's out. The writing and its pacing is fantastic. The art is dark, it's gritty, but it complements the script. As for the letters, man, they add feeling to the story, especially like, now, you know, I am a fan favorite of Taylor Esposito. So, you know, some of the words, like, okay, Dorothy's kind of like yelling certain things. Oh, what did she yell? Let me see. She yelled like stop and help when she's arguing with her dad, and the way that they were written and the placement of the bubbles, you know, I never paid attention to it till, you know, Chris spoke on our bonus episode, our interview with Chris Holmes. the importance of it, but in that book I totally noticed it. I was like, oh wow, because it didn't take away from the art, and he had enough room to put all this dialogue in it. It was great, man. When I read this issue, I read it so fast that I wanted more. I was like, holy crap, I'm done already, because I was so sucked in, especially from the beginning. Like, it's the family, the Corey family, you know, at Christmas time, and Uncle Jim shows up. You know who Uncle Jim is, the mafia family. He comes in dressed up as Santa Claus and stuff, and they show that connection of both families and how they used to be cool with each other until something happened to Dorothy's son, who in the first issue, he gets, you know, there's kind of like a drive-by in a way Well, not necessarily a drive-by because they're outside of the cars and stuff, but they just blow up the place, and he loses his life. There's a reveal in this book where the Fargo-type deputy kind of fools something, and she catches the Irish family, the son. Was it the son of Big Jim that she catches? Was he one of them?
You know, I'm not 100% sure if that's the son or the other guy's the son, the blonde-haired guy. I think the blonde-haired guy's the son.
Okay.
Because I thought the same thing.
Okay. Because there was the two guys there that she caught, and they kind of, and she tells the Corey family, you know, do you know these people? Because they try to kill you. So that's when, you know, let's rewind a little bit. In the beginning of, or the end of the last issue, Dorothy's like going off on her dad and her brother. And she takes that emotion into this issue. And she basically is like, she's putting her foot down and she's basically taking the reins of the family. And she's calling the shots in this issue because of what happened to her son. We see some reveals at the end that, man, this is a great book. You got to get on this book. I love this book. The first issue, I've liked the, all three issues. It's a great read.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. You know, I was thinking of what it reminded me of, how Dorothy begins to take charge of the family. I'm a big fan of The Godfather. And Mario Puzo, who wrote The Godfather books, wrote an end. He wrote another series called The Last Dawn.
Yep.
And in The Last Dawn, if I recall, it's been a long time since I read them. As the family's fighting for power in this book, it's a different family.
Mm-hmm.
It's the daughter that rises to the top, if I'm correct. And she becomes the leader. And that's what I was thinking as watching Dorothy push aside her cousin, put her uncle in his place, put dad in the place, look at her brother like, either you're with me or you're not with me. You better make a choice right now. And just the way she just took charge of the whole thing, it's like, okay, she's in charge. This is hers to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she could stumble. We don't know where the story is going, and she could lose it all. She could be like a Sonny in The Godfather. A hothead and get himself all shot up, and that's it. That character's not the Michael that ends up. So we maybe don't know our Michael yet. And I just really liked it. It just was fun the way she took charge. All these men. There's only one other woman in the entire scene, if I recall, right? Just the grandmother.
Yep.
Or the aunt. She's the aunt, or maybe, aunt or something. Yeah. And so, but yeah, she's like putting all these men in their place and taking charge because she's a mother that's brokenhearted. She lost her son for all this.
Right.
And yeah, and then they go on that mission and they bumble it all the way.
Yeah,
what a mess.
Well, that's a great comparison. And because I'm a huge Mario Puzo fan, I have almost all his books. He also wrote Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a little inside. But I think that was adapted to a TV show. And wasn't that character played by Christy Alley?
Like, I think you're right.
Because
it's been a long time.
The bad son, or the son that always got in trouble, kind of dressed hip hop and stuff before Sopranos. His name was Dante. I remember.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a huge.
Yes.
The mafia stuff is in my wheelhouse.
There you go.
But yeah, that's a good comparison. I didn't think of that. You just called me.
You took that family, but you put it in Fargo.
Yeah.
Because you still have the kind of like the rural. Rural.
Did you see my face when you said that? I looked all stunned. I was like, whoa. Like, I was like, oh, wow, he knew that stuff? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I was a big fan. I read those books. Yeah. Godfather is one of my one of my top probably five movies of all time. Definitely, yeah. I'll go to Godfather.
Yeah.
It's a rich book. There's a lot going on in the book.
Yeah.
Like you said, the art fits it. It's different than, say, again, we talked about Crowded and Farm. They're very colorful and fantastical in Farmland. And then you have like a very relevant social media type thing in Crowded. This is, like I said, old school, but it's done as a great crime story with a twist.
Yeah, it's definitely got, like, if you ever watched True Detective, it kind of gives you that feel too in the beginning. So if you like that type of stuff, but in comic book form, I'd definitely say jump on this. I would definitely say if you see any book with lately, like Elliot Rahal, like Quantum and Woody, he's done well in this book, or anything with Taylor Esposito, you can't go wrong. Remember, Juke Joy, all these books, you know,
these books he's lettering, right? Yeah, he didn't, like you always say, he doesn't pick a bad project.
No, you know it's pretty good. And he, I mean, this guy, Taylor, lives in, like, Jersey, so he knows what's up when it's mafia, so.
Very cool. Very cool. So what's your score for Hot Lunch Special?
It's definitely up there. I don't think it's worthy of a 5, but I'll definitely give it 4.5. I enjoyed it. Like, every time it comes out, I enjoy it so much. I found myself begging for more, but the teaser picture for next, where they have, like, the sandwich bag with a bunch of hands in it.
Yeah.
Man, I can't wait. I need that book now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm also going to give it a 4.5. This, the last book in this book, if that was the only two comics I got this week, I probably could walk away smiling even if I didn't get anything else. Yeah. And that's coming from a DC guy who's got a whole bunch of DC books he hasn't cracked yet. They just are, these are some good books, folks. And yeah, look a little farther, dig a little deeper. And this is Aftershock for Hot Lunch Special and Image for Crowded. Check these books out. Do yourself a favor. Both of these could be TV shows in some form or fashion. Well, I guess Crowded's going to be a movie, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And this one is actually written so well, it feels like a TV show in my hands when I read it. It's written, like, the dialogue is, wow, it's so good. Like, you can feel the emotion of the people. And it kind of helps with Jorge Fornes, is that his last name? Like, his art, like, it might be dark because of the colors, but the art kind of, like, sells the stuff. And Taylor with his word bubbles and his lettering. I mean, this book, just like the last one, both teams are excellent. They work well with each other.
The dark color works because you're supposed to give us the dreary, cold feel of that part of Minnesota.
Yeah. Wow. Now, I think more people need to talk about this book because there's not much hype. And that happens with a lot of Aftershock books. But I'm telling you, if you're listening to this, you need to, like, if you like crime stuff, mafia stuff, sandwiches...
Yeah. Definitely. And this is a little different of an Aftershock book. Like we talk about, Aftershock tend to have a lot more horror.
Yes.
And a lot more sci-fi. And this is neither, you know.
Oh.
It's horrific. Mafia murders are horrific, but it's not a horror book. And so that may be it. Maybe it's just lost that people don't think to look to Aftershock for this type of story.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great book. I mean, it's the mafia in Minnesota. What more do you want?
I saw it on the shelf at both shops I went today. It wasn't like that when it first came out, but now it's on the shelf at both shops. So whoever's doing the ordering is aware that this book has buzz.
See, so. At your store it's like that, but mine, they don't even order it. Now, I get it, you know, in the mail, but people are sleeping on this. You can't sleep on this book. This is a great book. I'll continue to post about it on my Twitter feed. It's that good. I believe in this book, and I believe in Elliot, man. He does good stuff, man.
Well, those are our books for this week.
Let's do it.
All right. So here I am with Chris, our other co-host. If you heard the first part of our show, he wasn't available for the reviews, and we're recording the second half of the show on Friday, where we recorded the first on Wednesday. Busy lives. We have to accommodate everybody so that we can get a show out to you folks, so you guys have something great to listen to, but at the same time, you know, meet our other obligations that aren't podcasting. Say hi to everyone, Chris.
Hey, guys. Glad to be back. I just want to say thank you to all who have been listening to the show and providing feedback. I can't tell you how much that means. I love logging in on Twitter and seeing you guys' feedback for a specific episode or a certain part of a show. Keep interacting with us. It's really great. And we hope you enjoy the show.
Yeah, definitely. Interact, ask a question, recommend a book you might want to have us to look at, or maybe an indie artist or an indie writer that's just getting started that has a book coming out. You can send them our way, and maybe we can figure something out to do interviews with them or something and showcase their work. For sure. That's something we want to do. So Chris and I are just going to kind of have a roundtable discussion about the books, New York Comic Con, that just came out. If there was any announcements that we saw, there's been a lot of TV/movie announcements. And we'll just kind of talk about comic book stuff, basically. So Chris, what did you read this week? Anything specific? Any homework you had to do that you can tell us about?
Yeah, okay, so I guess I've been reading some different stuff. As far as from Marvel, I actually have been rereading all the Old Man Logan stuff. I've been really interested in it. So I went back to kind of the old, I think the first Old Man Logan story appeared in the Wolverine solo.
Okay.
So this is like back in 2004 or 2005. So I went back and kind of read all of that. I forgot how good that story really was. There were some great like scenes in that book. Like, I guess I don't care about spoilers. That book came out almost a decade ago.
Oh, yeah.
So if you haven't read Old Man Logan, go read it.
The original.
There's like a scene, there's a place called Hammer Falls, and they call it that because that's where Thor's hammer is, because he got killed and no one else can pick up the hammer, so it's just sitting there, and it's kind of like a tourist attraction in this dystopian country. And I was like, man, that's such a cool idea. Yeah, then I guess that ended, and now it came back in like 2015 or 16. So I've been reading kind of the newer. It's had three writers, right? Who's the first one? Was it Millar?
Okay, Millar wrote the original Old Man Logan, where it's in the dystopian future. That's for sure.
He wrote the original. Then years later, Bendis picked it up during Secret War.
Okay.
2015.
See, that part I didn't know.
Yeah, he picked that up for, I think, 5 issues. And then after that, Jeff Lemire picked it up.
I think the last person to write was Ed Brisson, though, right?
Isn't Brisson writing it right now?
Yeah, he's on it. Yeah, he's been on this last run. And it's about to wrap up, I think.
Yeah, I think that in the solicit, it says something like Death of Old Man Logan or something.
Death of Old Man Logan. Uh-huh.
Which is, because it's one too many Wolverines right now in the Marvel Universe. And all we need is Gabby, so.
Yes. Hey, man. Yeah, you can't go wrong with Gabby. Yeah, I like it. And I like that. I like the dystopian world more than him in our world, in the current world. That's why I'm a big fan of the Old Man Hawkeye book. It's out right now, because they go back to that time period. And like you said, they show all
prequel,
that stuff.
It's a prequel, right? Old Man Hawkeye is a prequel to the original.
It's a prequel, but all the heroes have been defeated already. Yeah. So in other words, it's closer to Old Man Logan, but it is before what happened. Because spoiler alert, in Old Man Logan, Hawkeye has no arm. And am I right? Yes. He's blind. Excuse me. Blind. I'm mixing that up with Dark
Green
Knight.
Green Arrow.
Yeah. But yeah, he's blind by then. And at this point, he still can see. So, that's funny.
Yeah, so the Old Man Logan stuff has been good. Oh, I don't know if you got a chance to read it yet. The Avengers number 9?
No, is that the one with Hulk?
With Namor.
Oh, no, I haven't. You know what? Because that one comes in the mail.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't gotten that yet. I'm thinking Hulk. It's actually a Hulk book, but the Avengers are in it. So never mind. I got off.
Yeah, that one is really good. Avengers 9 is highly recommended, Andrew. The Avengers are going up against Namor. They pissed him off, man. He's pissed off.
Nice.
It's looking good.
What is this Namor like? Is he like the Namor that's in X-Men Red? Or is this like old school Namor ready to beat some mass?
First of all, the cover. I loved the cover. Have you seen the cover?
Yes, I have seen the cover.
Not only do I like kind of the character shot, I love that on the corner of it, like in kind of on the side. So at the top it says the Mighty Avengers. And then like on the side it says featuring Namor the Submariner, kind of in his logo. And I feel like that's kind of something that doesn't get done anymore in comics. Like, you know, when you look at like the old school kind of like Stan Lee, Jack Kirby stuff, they like, when it was a crossover, it was like a big thing all over. You see everyone's logo. And I love that stuff. And I feel like now when there's crossovers, you kind of only see the one logo for whatever book it is. But I love the kind of that little touch on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
And Yeah, this is old school Namor, not playing any games. This one is going to be good. You're really going to like this one. Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah. I'm excited. Yeah,
I can't wait till it comes in the mail and you read it, because I really want to talk to you guys. I'm going to see if Fred read it. This one was good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil it for you, but pretty much the Avengers piss him off and he's going to war. He's going to war with the Surface.
Nice.
And to be honest, it's one of those things that I think that people are going to choose a side, like Schism or Civil War or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Where it's like, you know, choose this side or that side. Whose side are you on? And I think Namor is totally right. I'm kind of biased because Namor is maybe, he's in my top five favorite like comic book characters ever. But like, yeah. I think he's totally right. And I can't wait to see this kind of play out. There's some great moments in that book. I haven't necessarily loved the Jason Aaron's Avengers run to this point. Not that it's bad writing. I'm just not one of the comic fans who are like deep into lore and like continuity and things like that. And this was very much one of those events. Like at least the arc before this one. The arc before this one was kind of dealing with like the Celestials.
Yeah.
And the prehistoric Avengers and kind of like one of those, you know, they're good. Like, you know, I understand their place, like in comics. I just personally don't love those types of stories, but I'm glad I picked up here because this was a good book.
Yeah. That Avengers book, started off, I fell in love with issue 1 and 2, and then it kind of lost it for me. It's kind of, so it's good to hear. I haven't dropped it. I'm still buying it.
Yeah.
But it gets pushed down to on the pile in priority. So it's good to hear that it's kind of found its spot again. So
yeah, this,
that makes me excited.
This one, put it on the top. Like, I want you to read this one. I know you're going to read your DC first, but after your DC is done, read some Avengers because that one's really good.
You know what's funny is the Avengers aren't my usually go-to period anyway. I'm more of an X-Men guy. So if I were going to divide up the Marvel Universe, just like, okay, with DC, I'm Bat Family. Bat Family gets read before anything else.
Right.
Before any of the other titles. Unless it's something really special like Mr. Miracle or something that's going on, it gets read first. With Marvel, it's X stuff.
Okay.
So my X stuff goes to the top of the pile above Avengers or Inhumans, or you know, you can go on and on all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the way kind of this I read was, it. So, but yeah, I'll move it up.
This was kind of it's kind of a light week on X-Men stuff. I think there's only maybe two X-Men books.
Yeah.
I think it was X-23 and X-Men Black for Mojo.
Yeah, and I think there's a Domino book. I consider that an X-Men book. And so the Domino book will be, okay. Actually, is there an X-23 book?
Yeah, I said X-23.
There might be an X-23 book. Oh, okay.
I said X-23 in the What If. I mean, not the What If, X-Men Black. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Domino, I think, that's an X-Men book, too.
Yeah, I like that. I like Gail Simone on Domino. It's funny, I don't like her as much on the Plastic Man, but I like her on Domino.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but going into that, I also enjoy X-23. I've enjoyed that whole arc. This is the end of the arc. I won't spoil it, but I am so relieved. If you've been listening to the show, I think especially in the earlier episodes, you know how much I loved All New Wolverine. It's kind of the whole reason I'm so passionate about comics today. It really kind of brought me back into the world of comics. And so X-23 and Gabby hold a very special place in my heart. And I am so, so relieved that this book was good and that this arc was good. You can tell that the writer really knew how to capture their voices. And yeah, you really get that sense. And I think, Andrew, when you catch up, you're really going to enjoy this series.
I've been impressed with her. I mean, it's not Tom Taylor. Okay. And that's hard. No one's going to follow him on that book right away and win us over. It's going to take a little bit because he was amazing on that book. That was my go-to book for those whole years. If you told me what's the best Marvel book, it may fluctuate a little, but in the two spot holding there, if it didn't jump in the one, was always X-23. Well, All New Wolverine, excuse me. And he just was so consistently good. So, yeah, it's nice to know that
she
somebody else
she
got her in.
One thing that she does do better than Tom Taylor is action scenes. At least as far as X-23 goes, I felt like only Wolverine, while it did have its action scenes, it was very dialogue heavy every, you know, issue, which is fine. I loved it for that reason.
That's true.
You know, I love the dialogue, the back and forth between Laura and Gabby, the inner monologue of Laura and, you know, her figuring herself out. That's what the whole series was for. But this one has some great action. It has some scenes that are just like, whoa. You know, even in that first episode, I mean, in that first issue, if you remember, like, her doing the gymnastics and the flips and all of that stuff, which was really great sequential artwork by the artist and things like that. So she definitely has a feel for the action. And yeah, so X-23 was good. I did read X-Men Black as well, the Mojo. Now, Mojo is not my favorite villain. He's not my favorite X-Men villain.
I
never thought he was really that cool. There, you know, he's just like kind of this big yellow, like Jabba the Hutt looking guy, with like a really high screechy voice. So at least if you watch the cartoon, that's how he was portrayed. And, I always thought like, man, Apocalypse is, look at him. His name is Apocalypse, you know, and Magneto with the helmet and stuff like that. And the Sentinels looked pretty cool. But like, Mojo never did it, but this is a good book. I felt like last week's X-Men Black with Magneto, right? And now the Chris Claremont book.
Yes.
I felt like it was kind of divisive. Some people liked it, some people didn't. I liked it.
Yeah, some people really didn't like it. I was shocked. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, to me, it was classic Magneto. It's... That's what, how Magneto behaves. I don't know. So I don't know what people were expecting.
That, I like Mojo as well. I think next week is Mystique.
Is it Mystique or Emma? I'm not sure.
I think Emma's the last one coming out.
Oh, okay.
I think it's Mystique, then Juggernaut, then Emma. But it's something like that. But did they say, do you know, like, how this plays into Uncanny, or if it does at all?
I don't know. I have no idea how it plays into Uncanny. That's the thing. The X-Men stuff is kind of out disjointed right now.
A lot going on with them, because you have the X-Men Black, you have Extermination, which is a damn... I feel like Extermination, I kind of feel bad, because I feel like Heroes in Crisis had, like... That whole event, like, overshadowed Extermination, even though Extermination came out a week before. Extermination number one, I believe, maybe 2 weeks before. It definitely beat Heroes in Crisis, though, as far as coming out first. And, you know, it's not like some minor people die. Like, these are some of the characters that died in Extermination have been around. And they've been in the series and on the team for a while. So if you've been keeping up with X-Men Blue, you'd be like, oh, well, damn, you know. But yeah, so there's a lot going on. So Extermination is definitely like an underrated kind of series.
You know what I think it is? The X-Men die and come back so much that I think maybe people don't feel the like impact that they felt with a couple of the characters that died in Crisis. Right. Where Crisis was like, oh. You know, maybe it had more of that impact. I don't know.
I mean, but
I liked it. I
don't know if that's fair, because DC like kind of retcons all their stuff every 5 years.
Oh yeah, so. Yeah. I'm not saying they're not guilty of stuff themselves, but I've cried a lot of tears over like Wolverine, for example. Logan's died and come back, and you know, different characters die and come back. And I think Cyclops is coming back. I think he's coming back. I think we're gonna get Cyclops back.
The only reason I think that is because there's too much promotion. I think they showed the cover of the Uncanny Annual that's going to be coming out, and it's all Cyclops. It's like Cyclops in all his different costumes, like fighting each other. And then there was also like a poster that came out a few months ago, like the silhouette of Cyclops in white letters. It said, set it right or something like that, or set things right. But I can't wait for my boy to come back, man. We need him.
He's coming. How could he not come? You brought Jean back last winter. you're bringing Logan back right now. Basically, Logan's back. And then, you know, you bring Scott back. I mean, he's the missing one right now. There's no doubt about it. So,
I can't.
Yeah, he's coming back.
I can't wait for that. That's going to be great. As far as DC, did I read anything DC?
Did you read Red Hood? Because you asked me about it.
Is that the one where he makes up with Batman? Does he?
If it's the new one, I have not read it.
Yeah, because so it could when be. I asked you about it, I hadn't read anything. It was that I was seeing pictures of Batman hugging someone, and I assumed that it was Jason.
They may have. I need to read that. I read The Flash first. I was very disappointed. Flash didn't. They didn't even touch on the Wally thing.
No.
And I get it. I guess it's kind of cool. They're letting him do his. Williamson has his own thing going on. Yeah, and you know, we talked about that. Don't disrupt a series for an event. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the middle with this. You know, it's like, okay, well, if he had his thing going,
yeah,
we don't want him to disrupt this thing. But at the same time, it's weird to have Wally dead and we have no reaction from Barry, reaction from Iris.
Because
you know,
Green Arrow had a really impactful.
Exactly.
I like that Green Arrow book. Just as much as I liked Heroes in Crisis.
Did you? You know, Fred and I kind of argued about that one because Fred thought it was the better DC book of the week. And I said, no, I don't go for the feels. Batman is the better book. I mean, I get it that there's a lot of feels in the Green Arrow book, but the Batman book, because he was on a mission to figure out who shot Nightwing in the head. He was on a mission. It was old school, like, I'm going to kill people to get the answer. Well, he won't kill people, but you know what I mean? He's going to beat people to death almost to get the answer. And I was like, ooh, this is crazy, Batman. I like this. And so, you know, all the stress is hitting him at once. So I like that book a touch better. But everyone else was, yeah, there's a lot of feels in Green Arrow. I get it.
Batman loves Nightwing to death, man. That's his brother.
That's why I'm waiting for the – I need that. I need that Damian. I want to know what Damian thinks. I need to know what – and now I need to read the Red Hood and know what Jason thinks because
– I want to – it's been ever since that wedding, man. It's been like, you know, just nonstop. But, yeah, that Green Arrow book that scene where he punches Superman in the face. And then he's like, oh, you don't know what I've got on you guys? Yeah. Right? Like, he's like, you don't know what I can do to you guys. And then, like.
And Martian Manhunter has to, dude, I didn't. Yeah.
He's like, bro, you gotta chill. Like, what was he talking about?
In Justice League, we don't know yet. In Justice League, I think it might have been one of the first Justice League issues or one of the end of the No Justice thing. Or it might even been in Green Arrow because they had a tie-in with Green Arrow with No Justice. Because I feel bad. I can't remember exactly which copy. But he met with Martian Manhunter. Now that Martian Manhunter is in charge of the Justice League. And he goes, I got something for you. It's a mission. It's something you need to take care of. It's very important. If everything goes wrong, I'm entrusting this to you. And then the Green Arrow issue, the next one, he wants to tell Roy about it. He's going to share what it is with Roy, and they never get to. All kinds of things happen, and then Roy says, I'm going to Sanctuary, and they never get to talk. That's what he's talking about in the latest issue, how he was so concerned with his own thing about telling Roy about this important thing that he never stopped to listen to Roy to see if Roy was okay. But it's about whatever Martian Manhunter. So we don't know exactly what it is.
It sounds like he has something that can take him out.
It does sound like that, the way he got in his face.
And it sounded like he was going to use it. So I was like, damn, this is crazy. He's at the funeral. He punched Superman.
See, that's the Oliver Queen I grew up with, though. When Oliver Queen, he was being written by, who was doing it? Was it Neil Adams? It was drawing, and who was writing him? Oh, I can't remember who was writing him. Shit, I feel dumb. But they made him that way. He fought with everybody. He would get in these arguments with Barry. He would get in these arguments with Hal. He would get right up in Batman's face and say, you can't tell us what to do. You're like almost like saying he was a fascist without really using the word. You know, he was just like crazy. Like, and it's good to see him back. Like, he doesn't back down from Superman.
Yeah, you gotta love him.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was great. But what have you read?
Well, those. I've been reading all my DC. Let's see. I read Batman, read Nightwing. The Justice League was not very good. That one let me down a little bit. The Wonder Woman is excellent. I was saying for the Justice League, I don't know what they're doing with the Justice, this last issue. I don't know if Snyder was drinking when he wrote that. It's this whole goofy, like, fill-in issue where Aquaman and Wonder Woman are discussing how everybody decorated their little room in the Hall of Justice. Like, they all have a little dorm room, like, or a little place where they live. And they're discussing it because Aquaman doesn't – I mean, Wonder Woman doesn't know how she wants to decorate hers yet. And I'm like, Arthur Curry would have a discussion about decorating? I'm not buying it. And they're going through each hero and saying their style. It's their personality. It's like – it was funny. Weird. Of all two characters to have this conversation, Diana and Arthur, who are pretty stoic characters. You know what I mean? They don't really show their humanity in that way. And a real cheesy joke, like you go to Batman's room and it's like a big old like door, like closed. It's like steel door. And there's a big sign painted on it with a bat signal, keep out. I'm like, oh, come on. The ultimate corny joke. Yeah, exactly. They went for the gag. They went for the kid gag on that one. And I was like, wow, this just is not like Snyder. It's like, what was he doing on this one? And it was such a disappointment because I read all these other books first and I saved that one for last because that's usually the crown jewel of the week.
Well, maybe it's one of those things that were like, all right, Heroes in Crisis is going on. So
I need something light.
Let that.
To make up for all the dark. Yeah. That's what Harley's for.
I've been getting ready for, I've been reading Spider-Geddon. Which I'm really excited about because I know in the solicitations for October there are a few.
Oh, there are a lot, my friend.
So there's Spider. I'm looking forward to Spider.
There's a Spider Girl. You have Ghost Spider.
Mm-hmm. Who? What? Spider Girls is a team of three, and I don't know who it is.
I know Aranya's in it though.
Mayday, right?
And Aranya's in it.
It's Aranya, Mayday, and someone else.
I think that the someone else is a brand new character. So,
is it?
Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure that the someone else is a brand. So two existing and one brand new character, if I'm sure. And then Jessica, why can't I remember? Spider-Woman.
Annie Mae Parker. I don't know who that is.
She's brand new. But Spider-Woman's also going to have a book. So there's going to be one for Spider-Woman, one for Spider-Gwen, but she's called Ghost Spider now. And then the Spider-Girls. So you get three female titles.
Okay. Guys, please buy Spider-Girls, man. Like, I'm not saying this because I work at Marvel. I'm saying this because I love Anya Corazon. She's my favorite. Buy this book so we can get more of her. Because I haven't seen her since Web Warriors.
It's been a long time.
And that was, like, a few years ago. So, like, please.
Yeah. There's a lot. I got suckered this week on that Spider-Geddon. Because I have it coming in the mail, the cover that has everybody on it. But I'm at the shop and I look down and I see they have a copy variant with the punk rock Spider-Man. And I'm like, I got that it. One? So I had...
He's a great character.
That was a good book. I really enjoyed the punk rock one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Did you read this week's... So you read Spider-Geddon?
I haven't read it. I have it, but I haven't read it.
This is gonna be good. I read it. It was great. It was surprising. It had some surprising moments, especially towards the end, because I wasn't expecting it to be that violent. But you know, sometimes with Spider-Man, you either get a really, really fun story and everything is, you know, jokes and this and that. But there are some times where people get fucked up bad and. I think this is one of those, and Spider-Geddon is really good.
Cool. Well, we should probably wrap it up. We talked about a bunch of comics. It was a lot of fun. Next week, we'll go back to our normal format. We'll do it as a three-man show.
Episode number 10.
Yes, we have to celebrate our first milestone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, well, I'll shout out to some of the people that have been really good to us this last couple week. We have Professor Frenzy Show, The Nation of Nerds, as always, First Issue Club, Oh, the shout out to Gian, because you missed this part, Chris. We reviewed Murder Falcon. Is that what it's called? Murder Falcon? It's all about heavy metal, and there's this guy. It's the power of rock. He plays his guitar, and like powers come out, and it calls this giant chicken with a headband and a robotic arm to fight. Yeah. It's crazy heavy metal stuff.
That sounds awesome.
It was. It's just so funny. It's great. But yeah, so. My name is Andrew Gay. You can find me at Real Comics, RELCOMICS. You can find our show at Street Level Floppies, Street LVL Floppy. And check us out. Download our podcast from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you like to download podcasts. Leave a review, give us a rating. We really appreciate it. And Chris, anything else? Sure.
Yeah, follow me at panels_hoodies. If you guys are playing Call of Duty on Xbox, let me know. I'm on there. We could definitely link up.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So let's see if I don't butcher this. We don't have Fred here. Maybe we'll have to like get him to record it for us if I blow it. Like the streets we call our own. Something about creator.
Creator. Yeah.